Welcome to Indie Movie Cast, the podcast for indie movie makers by indie movie makers. I'm Alex.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Chad.
Chad's with us. He is our guest host. Dominic will join us later. He's late coming home from work again. We're just always waiting for Dominic. But Chad is our first movie star to be on Movie Cast.
Movie star.
Pretty big.
Yeah. Chad. Pretty big. Yeah, Chad's an actor here in Albuquerque. Jay and I are both movie makers in Albuquerque. We're part of Ultimatum Pictures. You can check us at ultimatumpictures.com. And Chad has been in two of our movies so far. He's been in our award-winning Super Atomic Commies, which he was brilliant in.
Brilliant, my friend.
And then most recently, he was in our new movie, The Proxy, which is our doorpost entry that we've been talking about since the first episode of this show. So we're going to talk about The Proxy, but hello, Chad. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, and I call you a movie star because you are a SAG actor. You are in the Screen Actors Guild, which we talked about a couple of times, and you've been in a lot of major motion pictures.
And television.
And television. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so just a few of your roles real quick. You played a pretty prominent role in 310 to Yuma. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I get killed off pretty early, but, it was fun. It was a good experience and really just a great chance to watch some really amazing actors do their work, up close.
Yeah, you were on screen with all the big shots in that one.
Yeah. I had a chance to work with Russell Crowe and Christian Bale and Alan Tudyk and Peter Fonda.
Yeah, that was a
cool I remember there was like a magazine, a local magazine that's published here in Albuquerque, and I remember on one of the covers it had your giant face on there with a cowboy hat and a goatee.
That's right. Albuquerque Arts, yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, and then you were in that horrible movie The Spirit.
Yes. Yes. That's how it's called most times. Oh, that movie. Oh, awesome.
Yeah, but that was my favorite part though. When you showed up, you were like a
nice. Nice.
A lot of locals were in that movie.
Yeah. A lot of people worked on that.
Yeah. Well, and what else have you been in that's recognizable?
Let's see.
Aren't you in Crazy Heart?
I am in Crazy Heart. I had a scene with Jeff Bridges and Colin Farrell.
Oh, cool.
And I still haven't had a chance to see the movie since it opened just so recently here in Albuquerque. But I have friends, from all over the place on Facebook saying, we saw you in Crazy Heart. So I know I made the final cut, which cannot be said for Did You Hear About the Morgans, but,
next from that, huh?
Oh, you were cut out of the Morgan movie?
Well, I heard
that movie is worse than The Spirit, so
yeah.
It might not be a bad thing.
It's because they cut me out, that's why.
Yeah.
Did you play like a drug dealer or some sort in Plain Sight?
I did, yes.
Oh, yeah, in the Potts episode. Oh yeah. You and I were because I was working on the show as a location assistant, and you and I were on Halloween night.
Yes,
we're out in the Sandia Mountains.
Yep,
in this big fake pot field. It was
It was awesome and cold and
It may have been awesome for you. It was one of the more notable miserable nights for on that whole season.
it was all right. It's all right.
That was fun.
And if anybody's keeping up with the show, we had Scotty on a couple of weeks ago, who's a writer-director, and the movie we were talking about that he's made called Sweetie, you're also the main character in that.
You're the only character in that.
Yeah, well, except for a dead girl.
And
some dead mice. Lots of dead things in the movie.
Mm-hmm. So you do a lot
Your
of
performance short- was dead. Actually, no,
your awesome performance took them to Cannes, and you're great in our shorts. You do a lot of indie stuff as well. You do both sides of it, and you do a lot of theater too. I mean, you're in everything. You're like the hardest working actor I've ever seen. Actually,
no, you really are. It's insane.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's I think it's good to keep up the practice because I've definitely had times where I have not done a lot of theater or film and. Stepping back into it's, after not doing it for a while, is really hard. So
what were you doing when you weren't doing that?
I don't know.
Where'd you go?
I don't know. I think I fell off a cliff or something.
You blacked
out. I can't imagine
fingers.
You doing anything else, I did. But, you know.
I did. No, I think it's after a while of working on a lot of stuff, you know, especially after, like, for example, producing a theater festival, the last thing you want to do for a couple of weeks is be anywhere near a theater. So,
yeah.
You know, but sometimes the break just, you know, prolongs itself, you know, no shows are happening, no movies are happening, and just, you know.
Yeah, that was what was so great about you, though, just, you know, for the proxy, because you were, you know, putting on that whole theater yeah. show that was a couple of weeks, and you set time aside to shoot with us, and that was
yeah.
an easy task, I'm sure. So.
Well, it's also, I mean, there's worse things, you know, I could be going and, you know, laying masonry or something, but, you know, jumping from producing a theater festival onto a movie set's kind of living the dream, you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
so, you know, it doesn't really matter that you're putting in, you know, 14, 16 hours because you're, you know, you're working in what you want to be working in. So,
yeah, it's definitely a labor of love. It is for us too. I mean, we Jay and I were talking about how expensive the proxy was
yeah.
for us. You know, we kind of committed to not funding our own movies anymore if we can
yeah.
somehow. I don't know what we're.
But I think we got every dollar we spent and every ounce of time we spent on screen. So
yeah, it turned out great. So let's talk about our new movie. So if you've been listening, we've been struggling to make this movie for the Doorpost. We had some ups and downs, but in the end it turned out to be a great film, and we finished it just in the nick of time. We overnighted it, if that's a word, to Nashville, Tennessee for the competition on Friday, and the competition closed today. We're recording this on February 8th on Monday, so the competition is over. So if you haven't got your Doorpost in yet, I guess you have to wait till next year, but we did.
Woohoo!
I mean, I guess we did. I mean, they haven't accepted it quite yet, but they should have gotten it, and so we got it in. And I'm thrilled with it, guys. I'm so thrilled with it. It's
yeah.
It turned out to be tremendous. I mean, you guys will see it when it's online. I mean, we'll put it online even
hopefully.
If we get into the Doorpost.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we will. But
totally.
But it's a special effects extravaganza of. Clones. There's quite a few Chad Brummetts in this movie.
That's right.
Yeah.
Different personalities. It's amazing.
Yeah. So you play a character named Zeke, and you play a character named Sunglasses Zeke, and Bumbling Zeke.
Yeah, Bumbling Zeke's the best.
But
most popular. He's the Ricky Gervais
of Zeke.
Yeah. Casual Zeke. Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, chocolate
I think
candy.
That's...
Well, I'm sure we're losing our listeners. Most of them probably haven't seen the movie yet. But Chad, I wanted to bring you on and ask you. I mean, tell me ways that us Ultimate in Pictures are so much better than working with big movies like with.
Well, they totally. I think they are. From the standpoint of, you know, I'm not friends with Russell Crowe. You know, I think Wes Anderson has said that he likes making movies with his friends. That's why you always see, you know, Owen and Luke Wilson and just this kind of sort of family of people working. And I think that's really the dream, you know, is just being able to make movies with your friends and these people that you share similar artistic ideas with. And there's more of an ownership, I think, of working, you know, on an
right.
independent film or a low budget film that you just don't get for a studio. I mean, for so many obvious reasons, but you really are in it for the work and not for the paycheck, and it really shows, I think, in the films that are produced, especially considering. I mean, The Proxy, I think, is a great example of what you can produce when you really put a lot of thought and a lot of creative problem solving and how you're going to make this shot happen. And there's a real, I don't know, it's a really great thing to see. So I'm definitely love doing it. And I get more lines in your movies too, which is awesome.
Well, I'm feeling it too. I feel that we're developing a real team effort here in Albuquerque. I mean, it's a real nice community. I mean, with actors and movie makers and collaborators. I mean, we had Scotty on before. He's making a short in the next month or two. So they're kind of just churning out with us, and it's really it's really been fun, and it's actually the thing I enjoy most in my life right now. That's why I do this pod. We're doing this podcast is because I'm trying to build this indie film community, and I think it could expand. I mean, there's indie movie makers all over the place, all over the world. I mean, we'll see in the doorpost how many there are. There's going to be a ton of them. You know, hopefully we'll make the first 100 cut.
Along the lines of what you were saying about the film community here in Albuquerque, it seems like finally, just now, all these, you know, cliques, I call them, of movie makers are kind of finally, you know, meeting one another. And there's this whole, like, cross-collaboration that's kind of finally starting to happen, at least from my perspective, which I think is really cool, you know. And there's just more people, you know. I think everybody, now that we're kind of getting older and this generation has this real passion for filmmaking here in Albuquerque, I think now that we're getting older, we're kind of getting wiser and wanting to meet other people and work with other people, and that's really starting to take effect, I think.
Yeah, I see it too, and it was very evident in this year's 48-hour film festival in Albuquerque, because it was like a reunion. Okay, and Dominic just joined us. Hey, Dominic.
Hi, how are you guys?
What's up, Dom? You got Chad, dude.
Good. Yes.
Ooh, hi, Chad.
Yeah. So, yeah. Dominic, we were just talking about the indie film community in Albuquerque and how it's growing, and how we're sharing actors and we're doing it out of love. We're not really getting we're not getting paid for this side of our lives, but this is the side that we're really into these days. And Chad's with us. He likes doing the indie stuff, even though, you know,
which we're all very appreciative of, because there are a couple of I won't name names, but a couple of saggies out there who just feel threatened by working on anything indie, like they're gonna get in this real big, you know, like in trouble or something, and they won't do it.
Well, you're talking about the people in SAG who are afraid of doing indie stuff because without the proper paperwork, because sometimes
I believe in the paper. I mean, we'll you know,
which we did fine. This time.
Sometimes they're just a little too.
Yeah. You know, well. Chad's a humble actor, and we do appreciate that. And he's also talented. But I wanted to read this article to you guys about indie movies. This came out 2 days ago on Gawker.com. I don't know if you've ever been to that website, but it's an article called "Can Indie Movies Survive?" And I want to get your opinions on this. So this is written by Edward J. Epstein. He's the author of 14 books, including two examining the movie business, The Hollywood Economist, The Reality Behind the Movie Business. And I thought this was just kind of interesting theories. So here's what it said. If you're a producer of indie movies, the great sucking sound you may be hearing is Avatar draining money from your future projects. While this brilliant Pocahontas meets Jurassic Park mashup may be a bonanza for Rupert Murdoch's 20th Century Fox studio, which gets a distribution fee on every dollar it brings from the theaters, video stores, and TV, and its director James Cameron, who gets a cut of the gross after it reached its Hollywood defined $500 million cash break-even point. It will further convince the heads of major studios that their salvation lies in putting their money in high-value movies rather than indie stuff that lend themselves to sequels, merchandise tie-ins, toy licensings, and theme park rides. To be sure, even before the phenomenal success of Avatar, the big six studios were shying away from similar, smaller movies despite the potential profits. Consider, for example, a sad story told to me by one of the most successful indie producers in New York. In 2009, he brought a major studio to $20 million project packaged with a hot director and two stars. After running the numbers, the studio estimated that its potential box office in America would be $100 million, which would yield it just from its 30% distribution fee and its locked out outbuilt deal with HBO, 100% profit from its investment, but turned down the project when the studio told the producer, "We don't do films that don't have a projected box office for at least $150 million. So basically, this indie guy had a movie that could be made for $20 million. The studio thought it would make $100 million and didn't think that was enough. And so this guy goes on to argue that because Avatar made so much money, it's going to make it really hard for indie movies to actually get distributed. It goes on to say, the reason for this rule is that the studio only has a limited number of slots in its releases at multiplexes, and it has to fill them up with projects, whether profitable or not, that generate maximum revenue, and then take a slice off the top and form a distribution. So, Dominic, I wanted to ask you, what is with multiplexes? I mean, could you just, like, get your own indie movie released into a theater? Is that possible? Or do they just have these inside deals with these six studios?
Well, the way movie theaters operate is they have to, I forget exactly how it goes, but basically, the movie studios and the actual movie theaters talk about their lineups, and they talk about how much each movie's going to gross, and based on that, they actually make deals to say how much of the percentage of the ticket goes back to the theater versus how much goes to the actual movie. And so they do, like, these huge deals with these movie companies at the very beginning of, like, you know, the fiscal year or whatever, and kind of rate their whole years based on that. And so I think they only deal with big studios because of you know, amount of money they're going to get back on the back end of it. And I don't know. I just know that they have certain distribution regulations on what they can and can't play and stuff like that. So it becomes really hairy that, you know, when it comes to independent movies, it's harder to get anybody to play them because of that very reason.
Well, I imagine also it's like a marketing thing too, because this big studios probably have more money to market it, whereas an indie movie wouldn't
have
that money.
It's a big thing. I mean, even if you rent an auditorium, no matter who you are, you have to buy every seat in the auditorium. And so, you know, when they even would consider a movie to play a movie that's not backed by a major studio, then they have to consider how much they're losing because they're not playing one of their movies in one of their theaters. Especially in multiplexes, I mean, the whole way that they generate so much money in crowds is because of the fact that they have a movie starting every 30 minutes. And so therefore,
right,
they can get the maximum amount of people coming into their theater. And if you block that by a whole movie that nobody knows about, you're wasting space, basically.
And this guy goes on to say, you know, to talk about Miramax, and I'm sure you guys heard about Miramax getting shut down by Disney.
Yeah.
Miramax was Disney's indie studio, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
So this one's saying that they're all kind of going out of business or out of style, or at least at the moment. And he says that almost all the remaining players have drastically changed their acquisition strategy. Sony Pictures Classics does not buy any film that costs over $2 million. Focus Features is putting its resources in co-production deals in Asia, and Lionsgate is investing in horror sequels like Saw 7. With the prospect of American distribution rapidly fading, indie producers are now finding pre-sale financing almost impossible. It's a dead business model, a former Miramax executive said. And so it finishes. So how can indie producers continue to make movies? They might be able to find wealthy individuals entranced enough with a movie fantasy to put the money in, but they still need to devise a new way in this digital age to distribute them to an audience willing to see something more than movie versions of amusement park rides. So I guess I want your opinion on this. I think that's a little drastic. I don't think that indie movies are going to go away, because I think, you know, these expensive Avatar movies come and go. I think that's, you know, they're going to make a few that make a lot of money, then they're going to put $300 million into a movie that makes nothing.
Look at the perfect example, Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
people want content. I mean, there are so many times that, you know, some movie comes out that is a huge thing. I mean, Titanic didn't shut down, you know, indie films, you know, back in the day, and I don't ever foresee a movie simply based on its large production or whatever putting independent films out there. It all comes down to the story. If people are still writing good stories and telling good stories, it doesn't matter what kind of budget it's going to be. People are going to see through the smoke and mirrors, and You know, and other than the special effects and everything, to look and say, well, the story isn't that interesting. It's really pretty to look at, but, you know, so's the cover of Maxim. So, you know, I'll just save my $10 and go to a newsstand for an hour.
Well, I mean, but in the end, that these big movies that don't have very good stories are making a lot of money. And I could see where the studios are coming from in threatening things and shutting down some things here and there, because, you know, movies cost a lot of money these days. And it's hard for me, even a movie buff indie guy, to justify paying $10 for a little indie movie sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think maybe the answer is something. I think we're kind of in a transitional period here with the internet, movies online, and, you know, theater prices going up and things like that. I think either some movies are going to have to be cheaper to see than others somehow, or there's going to have to be a new medium. And I think something like Netflix, who has a subscription program where you pay them monthly and you can just watch any movie they have in their library online, might be like a something in the indie movie future. Like, if you get your movie on Netflix, maybe you can make some money that way. You know, if people are watching it on that subscription service that you wouldn't make in a box office, because people don't want to spend, you know, over $10 plus on a, you know, on a simple little film.
I don't think that because big movies are like huge budget movies are coming out that it's making smaller independent parts of these companies shut down. I mean, they were shutting down when I was working at the movie theater, which was like,
well, they kind of come and go.
The thing is it's not based on, I mean, in the end, I think, like, it started sucking for a lot of independent companies because they just weren't getting the right material, and they were suffering in the box office because of it.
Yeah.
And they were starting to get all these horror movies that just weren't, you know, getting the money back that they needed. And, you know, it's just one of those things where they were already going down and they get absorbed by another company. And the first thing the new company does is try to take out the smaller stuff, so that way they can make stuff for other things. And it's not necessarily the big movies.
I think another problem may be that indie movies are too expensive. I mean, it's a little weird that an indie movie costs $10 million still, you know, I like what we were saying earlier with us, like, you know, I think there's teams of filmmakers out there that can make a movie that looks just as good as anything else for next to nothing. You know?
Well, and I think a lot of the indie movie companies that like Focus and all those, they do go to these film festivals looking for new content, and they actually sometimes buy movies from these independent filmmakers. And
well, that's what this article's saying, is that's not really happening anymore.
It's not as much, but it's not as many independent movie companies are out there anymore. I don't know. I don't think that that's the cause by it. It's just how it is right at this moment, you know. And I think in the end that the bigger movies like Avatar that gross more money for the studios itself will give them enough leeway where they actually have money to play around with and maybe open up another independent, you know, fraction out, so that way they can start doing that again. And I think it's just another way for them to, you know, the big flashy popcorn movies get them money, and if there's decent people at that movie studio, they'll push it back into other independent programs and show that they're still indie.
Decent people at a movie studio.
But, you know, what's nice is that there's definitely a lot more younger people getting into these studios now that have that idea of thinking, is what I mean, and that are hopefully going to flush out the older, you know, people that are running these companies that don't know anything about indie movies anymore or understand.
I don't really see who you're talking about, the young studio executive with the indie movie heart. I mean, I don't really see that happening.
It's here and there, and it's very interesting to see that.
Yeah, I think the answer for the indie movie person is not to rely on the studios at all. Like, to try to get around it somehow. I like the idea of just getting things on the internet and getting them passed around, and maybe I don't know.
I think that's a big thing for indie filmmakers in general, is you gotta show what you can do anyways, and you can't do that unless you do stuff, and you gotta put it out there. You can't have just trailers of your movies online but not show the movie. You gotta show the movies, no matter, you know. I don't know why you would paint yourself in the corner and not show people what you're capable of doing, because that's the
only
way.
We see that a lot around here. Yeah, a lot of people don't show their movies online. I don't really understand that. It's like,
but they have trailers for everything. But yeah, no.
I think there's like a mentality out there that if you make a short, there's a possibility of it getting picked up in festivals and making money or something, you know. But if you're making shorts, the best thing you can get is exposure. And then you could get some attention, so when you make your next movie, you know, I wouldn't worry about trying to make money on the movies you're done with. Try to raise money for your future movie. That's kind of my goal with Ultimatum. And I think this is a great time for indie movies personally, because it's so cheap these days. You can do it for next to nothing. Cameras aren't ridiculously priced anymore. It's all possible. We do it all the time. Wait till you guys see the proxy. It looks very professional, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely changing with YouTube and Vimeo and all these different things. There's tons of ways for people to see what you're doing. And you know, I think it's being more widely accepted nowadays than it has in the past, and it's gonna continue to grow, I think. With people doing webisodes and all these different things. I mean, everybody's trying out these different ways to show their content online, and hopefully, you know, every now and then it does pay off. People are paying attention and you get noticed, and you know, you direct District 9.
Well, isn't that how your friend did it? Yorma?
And the Lonely
Island, they just made a bunch of shorts, and
they had a website.
Kept throwing it online, online, you know.
So that's my goal. I mean, I'm not really worried that we're making movies and spending our own money and not making money on them yet. Because I'm with Chad.
It's an investment.
It's an investment. It's for the love of it. It's because we're making good stuff that we're proud of, and stuff that we own. You know, the stuff that we know we contributed to. And I feel that if we keep it up and we make sure the movies are as good as they can be, then somehow, some way, success will follow. You know, it just depends on your definition of success. You know, I would just like to go, you know, maybe make a living off it. I don't really like looking for Spielberg type of status in my
movie. Boy, gosh, I am.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I used to, you know, in my childhood. But, you know, I kind of like making movies here in Albuquerque personally, and I intend to continue. But any other thoughts on indie movie and their future, Chad? What do you think? Where do you think the future is going to lead for us indie movie makers?
Well, I think the next tipping point is going to come through indie films. You know, I keep thinking, and part of the reason, aside from the fact that I'm, you know, a native New Mexican, and I same way, I like living in this state, I like working with my friends, but I really think that the tipping point is going to come through, you know, exactly what you were saying, of making a film that is driven by the passion to tell the story. People will recognize that it's going to get picked up, and then when these, you know, producers outside of New Mexico, backers for movies and things, see that you can produce completely a feature film with New Mexico actors, New Mexico crew, New Mexico writers, cinematographers, directors, then they'll start putting the money in. And I believe that it is only going to come through persevering and continuing to make the movies, and being inspired by stories and wanting to communicate with the audience. You know, I'm a firm believer that an audience, you know, in film, television, whatever stage, they're smart. The audience can tell when you're lying to them, and they can tell when you were being sincere, through your, you know, everything from like the work of the actor, the work of the director. When it comes from a place of honesty, that's when they buy in. And I think that's independent film is the avenue to really do that, because you can be honest with the work and, you know, hopefully people will bite. So,
you know, I think our movies so far have been really honest, and I think when people watch them, they know and they can kind of get that sense of the love that was put into it. You know, it's not just the actors on screen. I think like when you have a crew who wants to be there, and when you have everybody who wants to be there and is passionate about it, that really all of that translates to screen.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. You know, the care that's put into every element of what the audience sees, it goes down to, you know, the camera operator, you know, controlling, and, you know, just everything that happens. That's the beautiful thing about film, you know, is that you can completely control what the audience sees. You can't get that with stage. The audience could, you know, sit and look at their, you know, the back of the chair for a while, or look off in the wings or something. And when that care goes into it, you're absolutely right. Everyone that commits to a film, their work does show in it. It absolutely does. The actors are one part of the entire image that's filling the screen. So,
sure. And we've talked about it before. We talked about the soul of the movie. You know, some movie, and how we talked about, like, how we hate green screen, how that takes the soul away when there's a fake sunset. Yeah. You know, there's more to it when you could see the labor behind it. You can see the love behind it. You could see, you know, you can tell a movie which is planned out and shot the way a director wants it versus a director that does it from, you know, his trailer.
Right.
It's very evident if you watch Raiders of the Lost Ark and Kingdom of the Crystal Skull back to back. I think the love of the director, even though it's the same director, versus somebody that, you know, is calling it in.
But I think that's exactly what you're saying. I mean, I think back then Spielberg had this ambition, this joy of doing it, and now it's, you know, he probably still enjoys doing it. I'm sure he does, but now it's become a little bit more mechanical.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I'm sure the production was much, much larger on the fourth one than the first one.
Right.
You know, and I think the bigger the crew, the bigger the mess. You know, keep it small. Keep everybody working and keep everybody contributing, and then everyone will feel like they're a part of it, not just doing some job. You know, that's how I feel a lot, like in my work life, being a location scout is it's just a job. I don't really care about the end result because I really have not much to do with it. You know, I just find choices for other people to pick out things, you know, and that's why the work that I do, I think, you know, in the indie side is what really shows, you know, how my true inside.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about ownership earlier, you know, with indie movies, you know, where everybody who's working on this, you know, on these movies, these projects that we make, everybody kind of feels a sense of ownership, and they become invested in the movie, and they're going to want their work to be the best. I mean, whether it's just, you know, somebody bringing in props, or somebody, you know, designing the set, or, you know, acting on screen, et cetera, somebody plugging in, you know, the lights, you know, everybody, if everybody has that sense of ownership a little bit, you know, and passion, then they're going to put their best. And as far as, like, you know, these big budget movies killing the indie world, that's never going to happen. You're always going to have indie filmmakers, always. And
because we'll do it for free.
We'll do it for free. And it's just a matter of time before one of them makes something that the world wants to see no matter what, like Paranormal Activity or something like that, you know? I mean, movies are going to be made.
Yep. Well said, Jay. I think so. I don't want anybody to be discouraged by this article, but I do think it's worth a read. I'll mark in the show notes, but keep it indie. It's not going away. We'll find new ways to show our movies if they don't want to show our movies in theaters. But I think that's enough for our first segment. We're going to go on to Schmollywood, and we're finally going to talk about these crazy Oscar nominations. We'll see you there. Okay, Schmollywood, and it's the big, big time of year for Schmollywood. Everybody's really concerned with the Academy Awards. So let's talk about it. I'm sure by now you've seen what was nominated. I don't think I really have to list them off for y'all. But let's talk about the elephant in the room. What's with the 10 Best Picture nominees? Well, I mean, they've never done that before. There's all kinds of theories of why that's why they did it this year, and I want to know what you guys think. Is it just because they want to boost their ratings on the Oscar program? Because I read articles that said the year No Country for Old Men won, they was low on ratings. The year Slumdog Millionaire won, they was low on ratings. So they're trying to get these big, you know, crowd pleasers on the list. Is it because they just wanted to have an excuse to put sci-fi movies in, or movies that wouldn't be nominated in their usual thing? What do you think, Jay? Why? What's with the 10 movies?
Oh, you got me, dude. I mean, I would assume. I mean, I heard something that they wanted to make it more open for animation to be nominated. You know, because usually that's its own separate category, and
animation, I guess, and sci-fi and comedies. Comedy, I guess even there's not really a comedy there.
That
really.
Seems the Hangover like, didn't make it. If they're going to open it up for 10 movies, right. I you know, whatever. The Hangover is a brilliant comedy.
I agree. Yeah,
I think you were in that.
No, he wasn't. But
we just say that because he looks like Bradley Cooper.
It's his doppelganger. Doppelganger. Yeah. Everyone on Facebook enjoyed Doppelganger Week, right? But I would say the only comedies on there are A Serious Man. That's a pretty dark comedy. And what do you think, Dominic? What's up with this?
I'm pretty sure it's because of ratings.
Ratings.
You know, if you put like Avatar on your best picture list, then you know you got at least younger people joining in and curious about what this whole Oscar thing is, and you know, it's just to get more people interested in it by picking District 9, and you know, it's just Up is an animated movie. I mean, it's just these different ways to get more people to watch the Oscars, but you know what the top five actually good movies are on that list that should have been nominated by themselves.
Which ones are those?
It's the usual ones everyone's been talking about. It's Hurt Locker, Inglourious Basterds, Precious, Up in the Air, and I think, what's the other one? Avatar. Education, I think, is the other
education,
one.
Yeah.
Well, Chad, you're in the Academy, right? You get the Academy screeners. What do you think? Are you getting a sense that this is just a publicity stunt for more ratings, or do you think they just want to honor more movies?
You know, I think it probably depends on which person, you know, in the Oscar camp you're asking. I think the network probably loves the idea of having these on there, because it probably wouldn't matter so much some of the movies that are put in that list. It matters the fact that they're doing something unprecedented, that they're scrambling to get ratings up, and they're gonna, you know, do everything that they can in, you know, sort of clothed in this sense of we want to open it up to these other films. So I really think that the bottom line is money and getting the ad revenues up and getting the viewership up. And if they can, you know, throw a movie like District 9 something that it could say, hey, by the way, you're also nominated for this. You know, I mean, it's not going to kill anything to have the, 10 Best Picture nominations, but I don't think it's motivated by this sort of artistic, or, you know, them wanting to recognize these movies. It's I think firmly rooted in pulling the ratings up.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it might hurt things in the long run. I think Jimmy Kimmel said it best. You know, he said it's no longer an honor to be nominated. It's a disgrace not to be nominated.
You know? Yeah, that's a good point.
And it seems like with 10 on there, it seems like every year a Coen Brothers movie is going to be nominated, and every year a Scorsese movie is going to be nominated.
Yeah, they're going to find their favorite filmmakers.
Yeah, and then they're just,
oh, now there's room for all the greats all the time.
Right.
Yeah, and now it's going to be like the Precious is going to be like the honor. It's like, oh, I got to be that one that's in there. That's been besides the Pixar movie that's going to get nominated every year now. And that's just kind of what it looks like to me. It looks like these are so like anything that, and these are all big money makers too. pretty much all these movies made a lot of money. It seems like they're just packing in all the favorites.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre.
It's such overkill. It's overkill. I mean, I don't know, like when they get to that nomination at the end of the night anyway, it's nothing glorious. They kind of just, and the best picture is so-and-so, and then credits roll, and it's just like, it's almost kind of a,
yeah, it's, you
know,
like
anticlimactic moment that happens, and then,
well, I mean, sometimes, and sometimes it's, I mean, you can't say it's always anticlimactic. Sometimes it's like a huge ending.
I don't know. They always like throw out the best picture. That it's finally won, and then credits roll so quickly because they're always behind on time. Maybe if the Oscars weren't so freaking long, maybe. I don't know.
And another problem I have is some of these movies are straight up not good. I mean, I've seen 9 out of 10 of these, and I've seen everything except An Education. And, you know, and I guess that raises the question of what makes a best picture, because things like Avatar and The Blind Side and District 9, you know, those are really poorly written movies, and they're not nominated for screenplay. They're just nominated for picture. Mm-hmm. So does just best picture mean best overall movie experience fleshed out, or does it just mean favorites by audiences? I don't know. I watched The Blind Side this morning. Man, that movie sucks. That movie is so stupid.
Is that with Sandra Bullock?
Actually, District 9 was nominated for best writing.
Oh, was it? Yeah. Well, I beg to differ on that.
The Academy is built up on everybody in their different departments voting for what they consider to be the best. So it's, you know, in a way, it's somewhat of a popularity contest. And in another way, it's like some of their favorites that they've always liked, like Martin Scorsese always gets nominated because everybody's fans of him, you know, and whoever's worked with him is probably going to back him every time, you know?
Yeah.
So in the end, it's
political. It's,
yeah, it becomes very political in some ways. So.
It's bureaucratic nonsense, just like everything else. Oh, man. But let's talk about
whenever you
these,
vote for something within a group, you're always going to have that. I mean, it's just given.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Okay, but let's talk about some of these movies. Avatar and Hurt Locker are nominated for the most, so people think that they're head-to-head, like one of them is going to win, which isn't always the case. Sometimes the Oscars throws you a curveball. I predicted on an earlier show that Precious was going to get the Oscar, but now that I see it's up against 9 other things, I think that's pretty unlikely. I shudder to think Avatar is going to win just because I think Satan has a hand in this, but what do you guys think? Well, what's best picture, Chad?
I got to be honest, I haven't had a chance to see a lot of them yet, so I get a lot
based on hype, I don't know.
You know, if it's solely based on hype and, you know, kind of seeing an overall trend in the best picture category, I hate to say it, but I think Satan is alive and well, and Avatar is probably going to take the Oscar for best picture.
Doesn't the Academy not like to give people who've already won a lot of Oscars more Oscars? I mean,
no.
Are they going to just give James Cameron a lot more Oscars?
Tom Hanks? Did you forget about him?
Yeah, Tom
Hanks is one is like a Tom Hanks is kind of the exception, right? He's not the rule. I mean, he's won twice, but that's really rare, right?
What about did Russell Crowe win twice? No, he didn't. He was nominated for The Insider, and then he actually won it for Gladiator, right? Yeah. And that, yeah, okay. No, but I mean, it's another thing to think about is James Cameron hasn't made a movie in 10 years, so, you know, I think because of that, because of what he, you know, the way he pretty much swept the Oscars with Titanic, I think they may actually give him a little bit of love, because that's also going to boost, you know, hype and ratings and, you know, it seems the pattern with a lot of these movies that they've picked. So I don't know.
I see a little pattern here too that I think is getting overlooked. But Inglourious Basterds is nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, some actors, and some, I don't know, it's getting nominated quite a bit too. I mean, is this Quentin's year underneath the rug? Is he gonna come out and be like, hey, I've never won before, and I'm awesome. I don't know. Dominic, what do you think? Quentin Tarantino, does he have a chance, or is it all going to Cameron again?
I don't think he'll get it for Inglourious Basterds, but I think he's due for one. I'm sure that he like the next movie he does, will probably just give it to him because he was nominated this year, and why not?
Oh,
It's
I hate
usually after they've been nominated
Yeah.
once and they get snubbed the next time they come out, then that's when they get it. But I think it, I would think that it would go to, even though I haven't seen it, but I would think that it would go to the Hurt Locker, and I would think they would give an Academy Award to the first woman director
Oh, well,
that
I
saw
definitely
it.
think she's getting director. I do think
Yeah.
that, but I don't think Hurt Locker is going to get Best Picture. I would hope not, because it's not that good either. I mean,
Yeah.
I thought that movie was pretty overrated. I mean, it was let's talk about the Hurt Locker for a second. Did you see it, Chad?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I mean, Jay, you and I saw it, we both kind of
Yeah.
felt the same way after we watched it. It's a strange movie. It's kind of plotless, sort
Well,
of.
it goes nowhere, absolutely nowhere.
Yeah,
And
it
then
kind of.
people argue, oh, well, that's how it is out there. It's always like it's just so,
Well,
I mean,
I
no,
found that
but
I
this is
found
a
that
story
con
we're trying to tell, I mean, or watch, you know?
I, well, I kind of find out it didn't seem believable. I mean, it might be how it is out there. I don't know, but I don't see why there's these bomb def there are these people who just go and unhook bombs. Why and these bombs like hardly ever blow up. They just keep finding bombs and unhooking them. But it's like and it seemed
Well,
like in that movie there was a villain that
yeah.
kept like luring them places, but that never really got
Exactly.
played
It
out.
seemed like it seemed like Backdraft in that sense, where you know there's all these fires happening, and then you find out that there's somebody doing it, blah blah blah, and you know they come to some sort of conclusion. Whereas in this one, it's presented exactly that way. There's all these bombs, and they're all kind of similar, and they're you know, and it's like, oh, it's leading up to
Yeah,
one
so
guy or something.
I don't know.
I don't know.
You were talking about anticlimactic movies. I didn't really get that one.
Very anticlimactic.
And as far as it being real, they asked the guy, how many bombs have you de t yeah, disarmed? How many bombs have you disarmed? And he goes, 800 and some. And, even if he, there's 365 days in a year. Even if he disarmed a bomb every day, it's like, how long would that take? A year? I mean, it just seems so unbelievable to me. But anyway, so I don't get that movie.
I would just think that whatever happens, if Avatar does win something, that's up in the big director, motion picture thing, it's going to be a split. I don't think the director is also going to get the Oscar if Avatar's in the running.
Well, if we're talking about political stuff, the people who that are expected to win is Avatar for Picture, Kathryn Bigelow, director, Jeff Bridges, actor, Sandra Bullock, unfortunately, for actress, and I mean that's what I mean, Christopher Waltz for Inglourious Basterds for supporting actor, and probably Monique for Precious for supporting actress, then up for animated film. I mean,
And doesn't
that's
that just reflect off of, the SAG awards and the DGA awards and
Yeah,
what people have been getting from their fellow?
but historically, am I wrong? Has there not been big op Oscar upsets in the past, like all the time? Like, yeah, I would hope it's not going to be that predictable, because if they're trying to boost ratings, I would get bored at that point if these cookie cutter things are just winning like people think. But I don't know. What do you guys? Anything else about the Oscars? What anything else interesting you
You
guys
know, I
saw?
actually, I'm gonna go out on a limb and predict that Gabourey, the girl from Precious, wins Best Actress.
That'd be interesting. Yeah.
I don't. I mean, the fact that she got the Oscar nomination, I think, is pretty great. They could also go with Meryl Streep, since she didn't win for Doubt, and talk about like a woman that is long overdue for an Oscar. I mean, or at least
Doesn't
since
she win
her
all the
last one.
time?
She's no. She's nominated all the time. She hasn't won since the 80s, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if Sandra Bullock's gonna take it.
Well, I hope
That
she
kind of goes
doesn't.
back
I
to
hope
what we
she
were
doesn't.
talking about. Like, you know, they did an amazing performance, but they didn't win it. So then they're nominated the next year for a different movie, and they win it, but it's probably not as good as the movie that they were in the last year. But this was, you know,
Yeah, well, I
seems
mean,
like that
Russell
was.
Crowe's a good example of that. Russell Crowe didn't win for Gladiator. He won for The Insider. You know what I mean? Same
Right,
thing
yeah,
with Denzel Washington. He didn't win
yeah,
for
with
Training
Training
Day.
Day, and Training Days wasn't as good as, or.
This is such bullshit. Why are we even talking about it then? It doesn't even matter. If all that matters is
That always
like.
happens. It's just like, you know,
Well,
it
like I
always
said, I
happens.
mean,
You
all in
know
all,
that's what they're doing.
Yeah, it's well, it's people that work with these people all the time that vote for them, and that's just the way it goes.
Okay, well, in my fantasy world, in my fantasy football Oscar thing, Inglourious Basterds wins, and so does Quentin Tarantino. I don't care about the actors, and
Hey, come on.
Hey, Jeff Bridges.
best animated film goes to
Yeah.
Fantastic Mr. Fox. Actually, I honestly haven't seen Crazy Heart, so I do like Jeff Bridges. I hope he wins just because he's a badass.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I hope Sandra Bullock gets hit by a bus on the way to the ceremony.
Ouch.
That movie was
Same bus
terrible.
from
That
Speed.
Blind Side, I'm sorry, that was terrible. And that movie had like the worst child actor ever. I think they actually casted a goblin to play that kid. He was a nightmare. I want to
Hope
throw him.
Inglourious Basterds wins the cinematography.
Yeah, it
'Cause
should.
that was an so beautiful. So beautiful to watch.
I would agree. And I hope Up wins nothing, man. That's another one that's overrated. Do you like Up, Chad? You didn't either.
No. I mean, it was fine. To be honest, there are certain, Wall-E thing, I think it really it kind of brought a tear to my eye, but a lot of the movies that I see, the animated, that people just go gaga over, I maybe I'm
Was Up just about a stupid bird, or am I crazy? I mean, it was. I mean, people are seeing
I didn't
so
care
much
for
into
it.
this movie about like this crazy old man, these crazy old men, and it was ridiculous.
And the dogs. I didn't like the whole thing
Yeah.
with the dog. I don't know. I didn't like that movie.
Yeah, I saw Serious Man. I thought that was really cool, but I don't know if it should win Best Picture. It's kind of abstract, but I know a lot of good movies this year, actually. Up in the Air, I thought was good. Precious, I thought was good. It's just they're getting kind of overshadowed by these weird inclusions, I think. District 9, I mean it's a breakthrough-ish movie about half of it, I think. I think the first half is
Right.
pretty remarkable, and then the second half is just somebody trying to put every sci-fi element he's ever had a fantasy about into one movie, and it kind of just falls apart.
Well, the writing gets really sloppy at the
I
end
don't
there.
think that
Extremely
I
sloppy.
don't think that should be Best Picture. Hurt Locker, I told you my issues with.
That's a sloppy movie too.
Yeah, so
Yeah, because I mean, I would love for I would say my favorite movie out of all of those listed would be Inglourious Basterds.
Bastards.
I think that made the top of my list, but that's
Where's Lovely Bones, yo?
Oh, poor Peter. Peter. He thought that was gonna win everything, huh? Oh well. So I guess that's. Does anyone have anything else they want to add, Dominic? Okay. Dave?
No.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll guess we'll just stay tuned and see what's gonna win. I guess we're on the Tarantino side on Indie Movie Cast. And I mean, as far as indie things go, maybe I'd be glad if the Hurt Locker won because it's kind of indier. Actually, it's not really. Precious then. Precious is my indie choice. But let's move on. We have a new segment for you. Instead of Think How I Think, we're gonna do something new for you guys. It's called Troll Talk, and we'll see you there.
Uh-oh.
All right, welcome to Troll Talk. This is a new segment of the show. This is just going to be a fun little segment. We won't take too much of your time on this, but I think realistically we're not going to see a movie every week, even though I'd like to. And this week it just didn't happen. There was Super Bowl and a wedding here and there, working
Proxy
and
premiere.
proxy
Proxy premiere.
premiere. Yeah, getting our stuff together. So, I wanted to see that John Travolta movie that looks terrible, but we didn't. So I don't want to leave you guys without a segment. So this is Troll Talk. If you're on the internet, a troll is somebody that just says negative things about everything that anybody says on the internet, basically. And one could argue that we're kind of trollish on this show. We're very cynical
No.
at times, and especially
Just do
with
Alex.
well, no, especially with like upcoming stuff, like in the Schmollywood section. We talk about like upcoming movies, like we talked about Gremlins 3, and we get all grumpy and we think it's a terrible idea and we troll it out. So, and so this is kind of an extended segment of Schmollywood. We're just going to talk about some of the most absurd things going on in movies and pop culture, and we're going to rate them. And this
is good, and so
I'm going to give each of you a little bit of news, and then I want you to rate it either ridiculous, and that could be for anything that just seems crazy or completely absurd. You can rate it stupid if it's just really, really unintelligent, or you can rate it a train wreck if it is the worst idea you've ever heard.
Does that nice.
So it's worse or worst?
Yes. So, Chad, I'm going to ask you first. We'll go one at a time. So, Chad, I want you to rate this ridiculous, stupid, or train wreck.
Okay? All right. Lay it on me.
All right. Mr. and Mrs. Smith may get a prequel / reboot with new stars.
Oh, my God.
This is true stuff.
This is true stuff that's talking on the internet, you know? So this is another case of doing an origin story of some kind.
Origin story on... That's so stupid.
Okay, yeah. There you go.
No, that's not my official. It's ridiculous. I want to save stupid for something really good. So I'd say it's just ridiculous, yeah, because it doesn't need that. Like, I want... Well, no, I actually would like to see a younger Angelina Jolie. So, just ridiculous, for sure.
All right, ridiculous for that. All right, Jay, it's your turn. So Jay, give me ridiculous, stupid, or train wreck. Ready?
Okay.
Twilight's Taylor Lautner to star in a Stretch Armstrong movie in 3D.
I heard of this one too.
So this is the wolf kid in Twilight. They're giving him Stretch Armstrong. And Stretch Armstrong is that toy that stretches.
And they've been talking about this for a while, making this movie.
All right, so they're casting him. Ridiculous, stupid train wreck. What are your thoughts?
It's stupid.
Okay. Good.
Wait, what did you say? What did you say, Jay?
It's stupid. It's stupid.
Okay, so Jay, why do you think that's so stupid?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't call it a train wreck because it could be you know, moderately ridiculous at the same time. You know, I mean, hearing that they're gonna do what is it called?
Stretch Armstrong.
Okay, it's so wacky that you want to see it. You know, and
I don't know if I want to see that movie. That looks you just know.
But you're interested.
CGI,
you're at least
stretchy arms.
You at least want to see the trailer. It warrants a trailer view.
Good call, but stupid it is. All right, Dominic, you ready?
But stupid, yeah.
Sure.
All right, Dominic. Daredevil to get a reboot, and they're writing a screenplay for a new Daredevil reboot. Ridiculous, stupid, or train wreck?
Stupid.
I mean,
that's pretty stupid.
Yeah, I don't know if we needed a Daredevil movie in the first place.
First place, yeah. Right.
The second one.
I can't even say anything about that. It's just stupid. I don't know.
All right, Chad, your turn. Ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
All right, ridiculous, stupid, or train wreck. Okay. The director of Scooby-Doo and Beverly Hills Chihuahua is making a Smurfs CGI/ live-action movie.
Oh, okay. You know what? If it was CGI, I'd be fine, but if it's a CGI/ live action, that's stupid.
Okay.
That's stupid. I don't want to see a live action Gargamel with CGI puppet Smurf. Just make it all. Unless they have dwarves playing a Smurf, then that'd be fine. If they had Bert Royer playing horny Smurf, that'd be cool.
Yeah, they're not doing that. I think it's going to be more Garfield style.
It's stupid.
All right.
I saw a image of one of the computer generated Smurfs.
Yeah.
It looks stupid.
So did I. It looks stupid. Okay, good call on that one, Chad. Okay, Jay, your turn. Jay, Russell Brand to reprise his role as Aldua Snow in a spin-off of Forgetting Sarah Marshall called Get Him to the Greek. I couldn't even read that.
What?
So that's that British guy who was in Sarah Marshall. Yeah. They're making a spin-off movie with his character about him trying to get to some kind of concert or something. Ridiculous.
Okay. I think I've seen a still image. Is Puff Daddy in this?
Yes.
I'll tell you, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know,
It reminds me of Evan Almighty, a spin-off movie. Yeah, it's
strange. It's not the worst thing they could come up with, but it's unnecessary.
It seems like they wanted to give that British actor a movie, and they just decided to kind of kept this character because it was somewhat funny.
Yeah.
You know what's really ridiculous?
He was like the only decent part.
What's really ridiculous is that guy's engaged to Katy Perry.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
that's stupid ridiculous.
Now that's a train wreck.
Yeah, seriously.
All right, moving on. Dominic, you ready? All right, ridiculous, stupid, or train wreck. They're making Battleship the movie based on the board game, a naval action-adventure movie.
Oh, God. That's going to be a train wreck. The train wreck.
You suck my battleship!
If G.I. Joe told us anything about train wrecks, well, yeah, right. I predict this one will be one, too.
Okay. That's right up there with the Ridley Scott's Monopoly.
Yeah. There you go.
All right, Chad, ready? Yep. Ridiculous, stupid, or train wreck. Vin Diesel and Paul Walker to return in Fast Five, the fifth in the Fast and Furious franchise.
God, I was just hit by a train, and just, yeah, that's that thing was a train wreck. At the first one, it's just so terrible. That lead, I just want to smash him in the face with a pan.
which one, Vin Diesel or Paul Walker?
Paul Walker.
Paul Walker. No, I like Vin Diesel. I wouldn't smash Vin Diesel in the face with anything. But yeah, it amazes me that guy's an actor. It just amazes me. It's terrible.
Yeah,
it's
me too.
Absolutely terrible. So yeah, train wreck.
All right, Jay. Okay, Jay, your turn. Ready? Ridiculous, stupid, or train wreck? The iPad.
It's pretty ridiculous. I'm not ridiculous. Stupid. Yeah. It's stupid.
All right, Dominic, ready? All right, ridiculous, stupid, or train wreck? TBS and David Spade developing Joe Dirt, the TV series.
Train wreck. Another train wreck.
All right,
is he gonna star in it?
Gotta think, like, when they're in a room pitching this, how do they pitch it so that way people buy that? They're like, what, really? Yeah,
I mean,
Joe
how did
Dirt,
they do it?
TV show?
I mean, how did they do that? How did they even pitch the actual movie and get that greenlit?
Yeah,
you gotta wonder that.
I don't know.
That movie has funny parts. Chad, that's not good though. Chad, all right, ready? Valentine's Day, the movie coming out next week, is greenlit for a sequel before it's even released called New Year's Day.
Stupid.
Stupid.
Very stupid. Very stupid. I don't even, because, you know, I don't want to see this movie. Like, let's talk about, like, pitching a movie. Like, some guy goes in, he's like, let's get a bunch of actors together, and they'll be in a movie about a holiday. Great. Like, what happens in it? Nothing. They're just, you know, with their lovers, and they have fights. Oh, great. You know what? Here's a lot of money. Go produce it. Like,
tidbits of their wacky lives.
Yeah, tidbits and wacky. No,
they're like, it's Love Actually, and since no one can get jobs, we can get any actor we want.
Right.
See, so we can have a Love Actually with big stars.
The American version of Love Actually is what this is like.
Yeah, it's stupid.
Exactly. All right, Jay. Here's yours. Ready? Watchmen 2.
Train wreck, man.
Yeah, I guess they're saying that, you know, since the rights are out of who knows whose hands, they can just make a sequel, so they're thinking about
train wreck. Yeah, train wreck. And it, for obvious reasons, there was never a Watchmen 2 in the comics. It was train wreck.
All right. Okay, I like troll talk. This is fun. All right, Dominic, you ready?
Uh-huh.
Ridiculous, stupid, or train wreck. Bill Murray claims that he's playing a ghost in Ghostbusters 3.
Oh, jeez.
And Ghostbusters 3 is moving forward quickly. Yep. They're talking about making it in 3D with the whole cast, including Bill Murray, as a ghost.
Nice. I would say stupid. I'm not going to say train wreck because I'm still interested to see what the hell they're going to do with that movie.
I'd rate that a moderate ridiculous, but
Yeah, I mean, I'm really dreading this movie. They're just gonna kill this franchise, I think. It can't possibly be good. They're
So
talking
is
about
Dan
bringing.
Aykroyd and all those cats going to be back as well?
Yeah, but I think they're saying everyone's gonna be back, but they're going to be training new Ghostbusters, which
Yeah,
I can
okay.
only imagine is
Like Seth
most.
Rogen and.
Yeah, I was gonna say most of the cast is super bad. I was thinking Jonah Hill and stuff. All right, I got one left. I got chat. You all can share it, okay? Matt Damon says to expect a Jason Bourne prequel slash reboot before another Bourne sequel, meaning they still want to make another Bourne sequel, but before that, they're gonna cash in and make a prequel, a kind of a Hannibal Rising type of prequel thing with another actor.
Another actor.
Chad, what is that? Stupid, ridiculous, or a train wreck?
I think it's stupid. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's a train wreck, but I think it's pretty stupid. I don't know. At a certain point, me, you know, as an audience, I'm just like, I'm so lost. I don't know where they are. I don't care. I'll find another franchise to follow.
Yeah. Jay, what do you think?
I'm going to call this one as a train wreck.
Yeah.
It's blatantly unnecessary. It's completely unnecessary. And you know,
it might kill Bourne.
Matt Damon pretty much, you know, evolved into Jason. I mean, that's who is supposed to be this character. It's not a James Bond, replaceable James Bond. I mean, but maybe that's what they're trying to do with it. I don't know. It's a train wreck.
Dominic, train wreck, what do you think?
I would just say really stupid. I don't know if it could be a train wreck because I don't know about it, but it sounds pretty horrible.
I think it could be a train wreck. It could kill Jason Bourne as we know it, but I don't know. Whatever. They're just trying to cash in as much as they can. Frickin' Schmollywood. But that's Troll Talk, guys. What do you think? Was that fun?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Sorry.
Yeah, it was fun. Good stuff. I think this was a very informative episode.
Yep, okay.
And,
so let's.
That was fun, the troll thing. That was fun.
All right, well, let's wrap things up because we're getting technical difficulties and I don't want to lose my mind again. So, thanks, Chad, for coming. I'd like to have you on some more if you'd like it. And
absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having me. I will definitely be back.
Thanks, Chad. Thanks for coming. And thank you again for doing the proxy with us. We're really excited about that. We can't wait to show you guys when it's online. So the Doorpost is supposed to announce their top 100 on the 1st of March. And so we'll either be in there and we'll show it to you on the Doorpost, or we'll lose and we'll put it online ourselves. But we'll see how far we go this time, guys. But thanks, guys, for joining us. And thank you, folks, very much for listening. Please visit IndieMovieCast.com. We welcome comments, questions, and suggestions, so log on and contribute. Remember, we don't only talk the talk. To see the movies we've made, log on to UltimatumPictures.com and become a fan on the Ultimatum Pictures Facebook page. And until next time, I'm Alex.
I'm Jay.
I'm Dominic.
And I'm Chad.
All right, and Indie Movie Cast was put into the public domain in 2010 by Ultimatum Pictures. So long.